Okay, so for our final reading of the year, now when I asked Lumpur at the beginning what he thought he would read, the first person he mentioned was Upasaka Gi Nyanayon. So I thought, since he didn't do any of her readings, I thought I would. Kamiko did a reading of hers, and Debbie, you did one. Yeah, so I'm going to do. This is also in the Unentangled Knowing. It's a booklet called Reading the Mind. It's the very first talking here, and then I might do parts of some others if there's time. But this is called Discernment versus Self-Deception. It's important that we discuss the steps of the practice in training the mind, for the mind has all sorts of deceptions by which it fools itself. If you aren't skillful in investigating and see through them, they're very difficult to overcome, even if you are continually mindful to keep watch over the mind. You have to make an effort to focus on contemplating these things at all times. Mindfulness on its own won't be able to give rise to any real knowledge. At best, it can give only a little protection against the effects of sensory contact. If you don't make a focused contemplation, the mind won't be able to give rise to any knowledge within itself at all. This is why you have to train yourself to be constantly aware all around. When you come to know anything for what it really is, there's nothing but letting go. On the beginning level, this means that the mind won't give rise to any unwise or unprofitable thoughts. It will simply stop to watch, stop to know within itself at all times. If there's anything you have to think about, keep your thoughts on the themes of inconstancy, stress, and lack of self. You have to keep the mind thinking and labeling solely in reference to these sorts of themes. For if your thinking and labeling are right, you'll come to see things rightly. If you go the opposite way, you'll have to think wrongly and label things wrongly, and that means you'll have to see things wrongly as well. This is what keeps the mind completely hidden from itself. Now, when thoughts or labeling arise in the mind, when you focus on watching them closely, you'll see that they are sensations of arising and disbanding, changeable, unreliable, and illusory. If you don't make an effort to keep a focused watch on them, you'll fall for the deceptions of thought formations. In other words, the mind gives rise to memories of the past and fashions issues dealing with the past. But if you're aware of what's going on in time, you'll see that they're illusory. There's no real truth to them at all. Even the meanings the mind gives to good and bad sensory contact at the moment they occur, if you carefully observe and contemplate, you'll see that they're all deceptive. There's no real truth to them. But ignorance and delusion latch on to them all, and this drives the mind around in circles. In other words, it doesn't know what's what, how these things arise, persist, and disband. So it latches on to them and gets itself deceived on many, many levels. If you don't stop the focus and watch, there's no way you can see through these things at all. But if the mind keeps its balance or stops to watch and know within itself, it can come to realize these things for what they are. When it realizes them, it can let them go automatically without being attached to anything. This is the knowledge which comes with true mindfulness and discernment. It knows and lets go. It doesn't cling. No matter what happens, good, bad, pleasure, or pain, when the mind knows, it doesn't cling. When it doesn't cling, there's no stress or suffering. You have to keep hammering away at this point. When it doesn't cling, the mind can stay at normalcy, empty, undisturbed, quiet, and still. But if it doesn't read itself in this way, doesn't know itself in this way, it will fall for the deceits of defilements and craving. It will fashion up all sorts of complex and complicated things which it itself will have a hard time seeing through, for they will have their ways of playing up in the mind to keep it attached to them, all of which is simply a matter of the mind's falling for the deceits of the defilements and cravings within itself. The fact that it isn't acquainted with itself, doesn't know how mental states arise and disband, and takes on objects, means that it loses itself in its many, many attachments. There's nothing as hard to keep watch of as the mind. because it's so accustomed to wrong views and wrong opinions. This is what keeps it hidden from itself. But thanks to the teachings of the Buddha, we can gain knowledge into the mind or into consciousness with its many layers and intricacies, which when you look into it deeply, you'll find to be empty, empty of any meaning in and of itself. This is an emptiness which can appear clearly within consciousness. Even though it's hidden and profound, we can see into it by looking inward in a way which is quiet and still. The mind stops to watch and knows within itself. As for sensory contact, sights, sounds, smells, taste, and that sort of thing, it isn't interested because it's intent on looking into consciousness pure and simple to see what arises in there and how it generates issues. Sensations, thoughts, labels of pleasure and pain, and so forth, are all natural phenomena which are sensed and then changed, and they are very refined. If you view them as being about this or that matter, you won't be able to know them for what they are. The more intricate the meaning you give them, the more lost you become, lost in the whirls of the cycle of rebirth. The cycle of rebirth and the process of thought formation are one and the same thing. As a result, we whirl around and around, lost in many, many levels of thought formation, not just one. The knowledge which would read the heart can't break through to know, for it whirls around and around in these very same thought formations, giving them meaning in terms of this or that, and then latching onto them. If it labels them as good, it latches onto them as good. If it labels them as bad, it latches onto them as bad. This is why the mind stays entirely in the whirls of the cycle of rebirth, the cycle of thought formation. For this reason, to see these things clearly requires the effort to stop and watch, to stop and know in an appropriate way, in a way that's just right. At the same time, you have to use your powers of observation. That's what will enable you to read your own consciousness in a special way. Otherwise, if you latch onto issues of thoughts and labels, they'll keep you spinning around. So you have to stop and watch, stop and know clearly by focusing down on the consciousness in charge. That way, your knowledge will become skillful. Ultimately, you'll see that there's nothing at all, just the arising and disbanding occurring every moment in emptiness. If there's no attachment, there are no issues. There's simply the natural phenomena of arising and disbanding. But since we don't see things simply as natural phenomena, we see them as being true and latch on to them as ourself, good and bad, all sorts of other complicated things. This keeps us spinning around without knowing how to find a way out. What to let go of, we don't know. When we don't know, we're like a person who wanders into a jungle and doesn't know the way out, doesn't know what to do. Actually, what we have to let go of lies right smack in front of us, where the mind fashions things and gives them meaning so that it doesn't know the characteristics of arising and disbanding, pure and simple. If you can simply keep watching and knowing without any need for meanings, thoughts, imaginings, simply watching the process of these things in and of itself, there won't be any issues. There's just the phenomena of present arising, persisting, disbanding. Arising, persisting, disbanding. There's no special trick to this, but you have to stop and watch, stop and know within yourself every moment. Don't let your awareness stream away from awareness to outside preoccupations. Gather it in so it can know itself clearly. That there's nothing in there worth latching onto. It's all a bunch of deceits. To know just this much is very useful for seeing the truth inside yourself. You'll see that consciousness is empty of any self. When you look at physical phenomena, you'll see them as elements, as empty of any self. You'll see mental phenomena as empty of any self, as elements of consciousness, and if there's no attachment, no latching on, there's no suffering or stress. So even if there's thinking going on in the mind, simply watch it, simply let it go, and its cycling will slow down. Less and less thought formations will occur. Even if it doesn't stop, it will form fewer and fewer thoughts. You'll be able to stop to watch, stop to know more and more. In this way, you'll come to see the tricks and deceits of thought formations, mental labels, pleasure and pain, and so on. You'll be able to know that there's really nothing inside, that the reason you were deluded into latching onto these things was because of ignorance, and that you made yourself suffer right there in the very ignorance. So if you have to focus down on one point, one thing, focusing on many things won't do. Keep mindfulness in place, stopping, knowing, seeing. Don't let it run out after thoughts and labels. But knowing in this way requires that you make an effort to stay focused. Focus on seeing clearly, not just focus on making the mind still. Focus on seeing clearly. Look on in for the sake of seeing clearly and contemplate how to let go. The mind will become empty in line with its nature in a way that you'll know exclusively within. So that's reading the mind. And then from Unentangled Knowing, this is one of my favorite. It's from a talk, I'm not going to read the whole talk because it's a little bit too long, but it's called Awareness Right at Awareness. So she, this is just a continuation of this, that talk, talks about in different ways. And I think my favorite line of hers is in this talk. If you truly look at every moment in the present, there's really nothing at all. You'll see with every mental moment that things disband, really nothing at all. The important point is that you don't go forming issues out of nothing. The physical elements perform their duties in line with their elementary physical nature. The mental elements keep sensing in line with their own affairs. But our stupidity is that it goes looking for issues to cook up, to label, to think about. It goes looking for things to latch on to, and then gets the mind into a turmoil. The point is all we have to see for our, this point is all we have to see for ourselves. This is the problem we have to solve for ourselves. If things are left to their nature, pure and simple, there's no us, no them. This is a singular truth that will arise for us to know and see. There's nothing else we can know or see that can match this in any way. Once you know and see this one thing, it extinguishes all suffering and stress. The mind will be empty and free, with no meanings, no attachments for anything at all. This is why looking inward is so special in so many ways. Whatever arises, simply stop still and look at it. Don't get excited by it. If you become excited when any special intuitions arrives, when the mind is still, you'll get the mind worked up into a turmoil. If you become afraid of this or that will happen, if you become afraid that this or that will happen, that too will get you into a turmoil. So you have to stop and look, stop and know. The first thing is simply to look. The first thing is simply to know. And don't latch on to what you know, because whatever it is, it's simply a phenomenon that arises and disbands, changing as part of its nature. So your awareness has to take a firm stance right at the mind in and of itself. In the beginning stages, you have to know when mindfulness is standing firm. The mind won't be affected by the objects of sensory contact. Keep working at maintaining the stance, holding firm to the stance. If you gain a sense of this for yourself, really knowing and seeing for yourself, your mindfulness will become even more firm. If anything arises in any way at all, you'll be able to let it go, and all the many troubles and turmoils of the mind will dissolve away. If mindfulness slips and the mind goes out, giving meaning to anything, latching on to anything, troubles will arise, so you have to keep checking on with this every moment. There's nothing else that's so worth checking on. You have to keep check on the mind in and of itself, contemplating the mind in and of itself, or else you have to contemplate the body in and of itself, feelings in and of themselves, or the phenomena of arising and disbanding, i.e. the Dhamma, in and of itself. All of these things are themes you have to keep track of entirely within yourself. You don't have to keep track of a lot of themes, because having a lot of themes will make you restless and distracted. First you'll practice this theme, then you'll practice that, Then you'll have to make comparisons, all of which will keep the mind from growing still. If you can take your stance at awareness, if you're skilled at looking, the mind can be at peace. You know how things arise and disband. First, practice keeping awareness right within yourself so that your mindfulness can be firm without being affected by the objects of sensory contact, so that it won't label things as good or bad, pleasing or displeasing. You have to keep checking to see that when the mind can be at normalcy, normalcy, centered and neutral as its primary stance, then whatever it knows or sees, it will be able to contemplate and let go. The sensations in the mind that we explained at such length are still on the level of labels. Only when there can be awareness, right at awareness, will you really be able to know that the mind that is aware of awareness in this way doesn't send its knowledge outside of this awareness. There are no issues. Nothing can be concocted in the mind when it knows in this way. In other words, an inward staying, unentangled knowing, all outward going knowing cast aside. The only thing you have to work at maintaining in this state of mind at normalcy, knowing, seeing, and still in the present. If you don't maintain it, if you don't look after it, then when sensory contact comes, it will have an effect. The mind will go out with labels of good and bad, liking and disliking. So make sure you maintain the basic awareness that's aware right at yourself, and don't let there be any labeling, no matter what sort of sensory contact comes. You have to make sure that this awareness comes first. If you train yourself correctly in this way, everything will stop. You won't go straying out through the senses of sight, hearing, etc. The mind will stop and look, stop and be aware, right at awareness, so as to know the truth that all things arise and disband. There's no real truth to anything. Only our stupidity is what latches on to things, giving them meaning and then suffering for it. Suffering because of its ignorance, suffering because of its unacquaintedness with the five aggregates, forms, feeling, perceptions, thought formations, and consciousness, all of which are inconstant, stressful, and not self. Use mindfulness to gather your awareness together, and the mind will stop getting unsettled, stop running after things. It will be able to stop and be still. Then make it know in this way, see in this way constantly, at every moment, with every activity. Work and watch and know the mind in and of itself. That will be enough to cut away all sorts of issues. You won't have to concern yourself with them.
One of the points of difference between the various teachers we've read, it seems to be that a few, like Upasaka Key, really emphasize mindfulness of the mind itself, whereas others say basically the mind is too slippery in the beginning. Go for the body. If you go for the mind, you're going to fail. And I'm just curious if how to, I guess you just say, well, different. If you have any sort of reflections on that.
Yes, I have reflections on that. You have to pay attention for yourself. What is it that helps the mind be free from suffering? Anything else?
How do you do that?
Do you have to do another three-month retreat? Pound it in and do the readings from the Thai forest Ajahn's again.
For myself, that is noticeable, just that as far as a similarity is pounding into people that what it's about is suffering and the ending of suffering. And then there's all these other interesting, maybe bypaths, but, you know, like we were having a midnight tea discussion here in the unofficial one, perhaps, the last sit, and it was really good, and we were talking about science, and you know, you realize the whole, you discover the entire truth of the universe, and the universe originated. You're still just completely miserable.
Yes, yeah. So it's a, you know, finding what... I mean, there's certain ways that the mind you know, will tend to go, tracks it will go down, but you have to pay attention to where it ends. But the it's not about technique. It's about how to what kind of view one. Even if you're paying attention to the body, paying attention to the mind, implementing some other technique, the fundamental quality that one needs to be attentive to is, how is it being held? What is the view? Because without that view, or say that right view, of one of the things that came up in my mind is the how she articulated it, and that sense of that relinquishing of all grasping, and thinking back to the when the Buddha was asked what is, a succinct articulation of his teaching and the Buddha, sambhedam manalam abhinivesaya. If you know this, you know everything, and that all dhammas are not to be clung to, and that's the fundamental. Essence of the whole teaching, because you can pay attention to the body and cling to it. You can pay attention to the mind and cling to it. You can direct attention wherever and cling to it. But that misses the point. It will always end up in suffering when there is grasping and clinging. So then they. Being able to holding the view of, it's like Ajahn Chah saying, yes, you only need to do two things, know and let go. It's all one needs to do.
I guess one sort of further way of describing concern is that with working with the mind, especially if the environment is rather comfortable, I wonder if it's possible to, well, you can cut out a lot of suffering, but then if you find yourself in, you know, pain, you know, facing pain in the body and the fear of death, obviously, if you really knew the mind, those would be no problem. But yeah, I can certainly see in myself, you know, just sort of skipping past those, because in a comfortable situation they don't come up. And
yeah, but if it comes up if you're trying to maintain a comfortable situation, because you're struck with fear or discomfort or disease.
This teaching, this succinct teaching of no and let go. I notice there's this tendency in the mind to kind of go through the motions of that without really sort of being able to enter into it. Mm-hmm. Like there's depths and layers of...
Oh, yeah, it keeps going down.
And so the tendency to sort of like sit along on the surface, it seems like you can waste a lot of time doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there... I don't know, what do I do about that?
Well, I think the thing is, that's where
Honesty.
It really comes down to being honest with oneself, of course, because you're not doing the practice for anybody else. So that sense of really, because one is cultivating the practice, and so that one is really cultivating that sense of honesty, and so that one isn't fooling yourself. Okay, I'm really keeping myself busy here, and things are really rolling along. Whereas in reality, skipping along the surface, and one knows one, one knows one's cutting corners, and obviously we do that all the time, because it takes effort to that extra bit of attention, that extra bit of patience, that extra bit of peeling away a layer that we might not want to see what's underneath. So there is a sort of honesty that is one has to keep relying on. But then it starts to tie into other aspects of those wholesome qualities or varmi, so you sort of see how those are a helpful part of the process of supporting the path. Because on an ideal level, we just go straight for the throat and have it be a done deal. But then there's all these different ways that the mind gets clouded or distracted or uncomfortable. And so then that template of the Varmis is a really useful template, even if it's not used by the Buddha. But one recognizes how useful it's been implementing, in the sense of, with that quality of honesty, but then that's that patience. And then if we have that patience, we can't just sort of slog along with patience. One has to have a sort of loving kindness. It has to be calm, but then you better be discerning, so you have to and then you can start to be a bit too incisive, so you need kind of a generosity of spirit. So then you start realizing, it all fits together. There's a balance that is required in sort of shoring up that desire to get to the heart of it.
The desire to get to the heart of it is what's kind of behind the drive to be here and do this. But there's these kind of two poles that the mind, I find myself swinging between. Yeah. And one is this pole of, it's this simple, just these two things.
Right.
And the other one is like, there's all these other things too.
Right.
Yeah, there's all these barmies and all these different practices and the four foundations of this and all that.
Yeah.
So it can be so overwhelming in terms of its complexity. And sort of finding my way through this fog of possibilities of what I'm doing wrong.
Right.
It seems like there's part of the mind that really, really wants to do this. Right. And then there's this huge part of the mind that has a different agenda. It isn't going along with this program. And it's not under my control, right? So I just have to kind of try stuff out, and I don't actually have any sort of sense of direction half the time. So I'm just going to keep doing this because it can't be anything better. And so I don't know if there's really a question there, other than just like that. This is the dilemma. How do I keep myself on the path, given that I'm struggling in this kind of way?
Again, it comes back to that recognition of
suffering and come to where is the end of that suffering. And so that and in between those different agendas, in reality, they both don't want to suffer. And so then that's sort of, okay, what's actually working or helping or ameliorating at this time? Because at different times, the different approaches will work. But you come back to the experience. What is it that's helping the mind to not suffer?
This is what Bhaskar Gita says about that. Yeah, because like always talks to Kabrini, and she kept coming back to you, coming back to seeing the arising, persisting, understanding. So she says, eventually you have to come down to the awareness that everything simply arises, persists, and then disbands. Make sure that you stay focused on the disbanding. When you watch just the arising, you'll get carried away off on tangents. But if you stay focused on the disbanding, you'll see emptiness. Everything is disbanding every moment. No matter what you look at, no matter what you see, it's there just for an instant and then disbands. Then it arises again, then it disbands. There's simply arising, no disbanding.
So the problem with that picture is that I'm looking at the floor and it seems like it's really kind of staying pretty steady actually. It's not disbanding at all.
It is, if you look over here.
Yeah.
Where the water's going in.
Right, so you know, I kind of understand that in a theoretical way, that like the experience of the floor disbands as soon as I close my eyes or I stop paying attention to it or whatever. But it's not like a practical yet for my daily moment-to-moment experience of life as a way of pursuing Dhamma. I need something that's like more operational. Because, you know, if I can, my mind's still enough to actually attend to the standing aspect of experience, then my meditation's in a different place than it is right now. You know, I can't actually do that all the time. Yeah. But I think I understand what she's saying, but I also see the limitations of trying to apply that to the situation.
Yeah, and that's where those aspects of it's like in the where the Buddha gives the image of the seven factors of enlightenment, so that there's the aspects of stilling non-attachments. And then there's the aspects of bringing into being or brightening, and he gives the example. I saw that some with Dhammavicaya, effort and joy as being the brightening, energizing, forward moving qualities, and then the sense of tranquility, concentration, equanimity as being the stilling, the settling, the dampening quality, so that there's this balance that we need to be paying attention to. If one wants a fire to spring up, then you don't put on damp branches and dirt and sand. So in the same way, if you want the mind to brighten, but it's kind of having a tough time, then you don't use the tranquility, concentration, equanimity, because that just sucks energy out, and you have to come to those other qualities. So that attending to that, and the opposite is true. So that attending, and then the Buddha said that, but mindfulness is always useful.
One of the things you said to me during the retreat was just like noticing cessation, noticing relinquishment, and the results of that. And one of the things that's really helpful is when the practice is difficult, then one can look at wholesome states and say, oh, this is the result when I did this. there actually was something good that came of it. And just that little bit of, it's kind of like that joy you're talking about, you know, just that little bit of like, oh, wow, there's, this is actually like coming out of something I did. Like if I say it in a kuti or whatever action I did, then like, it's easy to skip over that.
Yeah.
You know, to skip over like wholesome states, skip over like the fact that a lot of wholesome acts create wholesome karma, and then that's like the fuel for like, oh wow, it works.
Yeah. So it's, yeah, I think that was something that that was really important, that taking note of something that we tend to not do or forget about, but taking note of the and cherishing, relishing the good that we've done, because it's easy to forget it or to be so focused on an ultimate goal that we neglect the things that nurture the actual path itself. Ajahn Sujito was, he's always got a phrase that his ability to use language is one of the things that we cultivate and develop is the art of the pause. It's an art to be able to pause and not just go on to the next thing, whether it's the next thing being some lofty goal, or the next thing being something that is taking them off into something unskillful and unwholesome. There's an art to pausing. And when one pauses, then one has a chance to recognize that which is useful, beneficial. Okay.